Greetings to those on the webcast. We're just back from Gatlinburg. It's like to hear everybody's stories. It's fun to hear everybody's stories, except for Bill's. I don't like to hear Bill's story. I'll have to ask him about that. At the feast this year, my daughter and I were talking about the differences between the United Church of God and the other ministerial organizations of the church. And I said, I think there aren't very many differences at all in doctrine, but one difference I did bring up to her was that UCG does not prescribe the third tithe, the collecting of the third tithe in the third tithe year, while some others do. And this kind of puzzled my daughter, because she remembers when she was pretty little, she understood that our family set aside 23%, and 10% first tithe, 10% second tithe, and then you start saving up for a third tithe year by saving about 3%. And so she wondered why the change. You know, if it's in the Bible, it was in the Bible then, why the change? And I thought, well, nearing the end of the year, that topic might be an interesting thing to bring up, since we're all about our personal bookkeeping duties this time of year. That is, you're just starting a new accumulation of second tithe, and you're going to be summing up your first tithe for the end of the taxable year. But what about the third tithe? Why not practice the third tithe? The Bible describes a third tithe in 2 years out of seven, so why don't we do it? I'd like to point out that there still is a third tithe principle, and that's my title today. I didn't get the title in time, but the third tithe principle. We have a study paper on the subject that gives the history and the reasoning for the change. You go to the members page, ucg.org/members. There's a member resources there, and under member resources are study papers, and there's a study paper under there called Third Tithe. The institution of the third tithe is in Deuteronomy 14, I think that's the first place at least, where it's talked about. Deuteronomy 14, verse 28 says, at the end of 3 years, so you shall bring forth all the tithe of your increase the same year, and shall lay it up within your gates. And the Levite, because he has no part or inheritance with you, and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow, which are within your gates, shall come and shall eat and be satisfied, that the Lord your God may bless you in all that in all the work of your hand which you do. So the intent of the law is to support anyone who is in need, especially those who have no family support system. That would be, of course, the stranger, because he's an immigrant. He has no family to support him. The Levite, he has family, but he has no homeland, no family homeland to return to back up his wealth. And of course, the fatherless and the widow who have lost their primary breadwinner. And the third tithe was one of the foundational and institutional ways that the nation of Israel was to practice mercy, as the Bible calls it, mercy to such people. And the pattern was every 3 years, that is, it fit into a 7-year cycle that you would give a tithe the first year and the third year out of seven. So it was part of a larger cycle. The 7-year cycle was a release of debts. That was a national system. And that cycle fit into a seven times seven cycle, which was the Jubilee. So that was a part of the national system as well. If you give a tithe twice in 7 years, that's about 2.9%. So I'll just say 3% for a round number. Now, our third tithe history. For decades, we in the Church of God did practice a third tithe year on an individual basis. And we created a fund with which the church could help those who were struggling financially. But the change away from the third tithe did not start with United. It wasn't United's idea, in case you thought it was. It started with Mr. Armstrong in 1982. At that time, it became clear that certain countries provided an assistance via particularly high taxes, heavy national taxation, especially in Britain and in Scandinavia. Their taxes were high, but they provided a high level of support in the form that the third tithe for Israel was meant to provide. So it was recognized in 1982 that to pay a third tithe on top of those taxes was a heavy burden for those people. And I think it was a credit to our brethren in Scandinavia and in Britain that they paid those tithes without grumbling. But it was really a double tax on them. And so Mr. Armstrong and the administration of the church recognized that it was far more of a burden than the law intended it to be. We have to remember that the third tithe year was a part of a larger national system. As I said, it was part of the seven-year cycle, and it was part of the 50-year cycle. But the system had to be adapted for the church because the church is not a country. We don't all release our debts, and we aren't released from our debts every 7 years. That is a national practice that was for Israel, but not for the church. So later in those days, back in the 80s, the principle was applied to other European countries besides Britain and Scandinavia, and eventually to all countries in the world that had a similar, very strong social welfare system. Mr. Armstrong made the administrative decision that members did not need to pay the tax if, in effect, they were already being taxed that third tithe by their government for the purpose of the third tithe. But that ruling never did include the United States during Mr. Armstrong's lifetime. So in 1996, United Council of Elders resolved to do the same thing, but to include the United States. It was a logical extension, I think, logical extension of the principle that was applied to every country outside of the U.S. That is, if members were already taxed at a rate above the third tithe rate, that approximately 3%, then they did not need to pay a third tithe. And the government takes 6% of our gross from the employer, and another 6.2% from us individually from our salary. So that's 12% that the government takes. Now that's not all to support the poor. That is to support people like me who get Social Security retirement benefits. But I don't know exactly what the number is, but part of that does go to support those who are in financial need. And we presume that it is close to that 3%. So because of that government service provided through those taxes, UCG does not instruct us to pay third tithe in 2 out of every 7 years. It would be like a double tax, and we don't have to do it. We do not practice third tithe years. But there is a principle, a greater principle behind the third tithe, and that is what the Bible calls mercy. Mercy. Support for the poor, for the unfortunate, for anybody who's run into sickness or some other calamity is one of the three weightier matters of the law, as Jesus called them in Matthew 23:23. They are first justice or fairness. That's the first one. The second one is called mercy, or it could be translated kindness. Mercy or kindness. And thirdly, there's faith or faithfulness to God. Those are the three things that Jesus said were the three weightier matters of the law. And support of such people who are in need was a great big part of that second great matter of the law, mercy. That's what the Bible means by mercy. For example, the prophets of the Old Testament repeatedly said that God was angry with Israel because they were not upholding that principle of the law. For example, in Ezekiel 22:7, I'll just quote you an example, when Ezekiel says, "In you they have made light of father and mother," breaking that commandment. "In your midst they have oppressed the stranger. In you," speaking of Israel, "they have mistreated the fatherless and the widow." Those were examples of breaking the weightier matter of the law, which is mercy. A good example of mercy in the New Testament is in the parable of the Good Samaritan, which you'd find in Luke 10. I won't read the whole parable to you, but in Luke 10, verse 30, of course, the man traveling from Jerusalem, I think he's traveling down to Jericho, he's attacked by thieves. Remember that story? The Good Samaritan is the only one of the passersby who helps him. And Jesus then says, which now of these three do you think was neighbor unto him that fell among the thieves? And the lawyer that he was talking to said, he that showed mercy on him. You know, mercy, kindness. The Good Samaritan was practicing mercy. And we're obligated under the law to practice mercy, which is a great principle of the law. Mr. Armstrong himself, by the way, even if he did not require the third tithe outside of the U.S., certain countries still maintained a church assistance fund for that very purpose, and we do too. There are still needs in the church beyond what the national social programs provide. And the practice of kindness and generosity is still a principle, and it is still our obligation. And toward that end, then, we have this church assistance fund, if we want to use that mechanism. We don't have to use that mechanism. You can do it on your own, individually, of course. When you see a need, especially in the church, you are obligated to fill it, if you can. That's the principle of mercy. This obligation is stated quite clearly in the letter of James. The Apostle James wrote to the church spread abroad in the Roman Empire, to the 12 tribes scattered abroad, as he called them. And they were admonished, if they were wealthy, and the Jews outside, the Jewish Christians outside of Judea were much wealthier than those in Judea, at least at that time. James 2, verses 14 through 17, James writes to them, what does it profit, my brethren, though a man say he has faith and have not works? Can faith save him? So these brethren that he's writing to are believers. That's his meaning of faith here in this context. They are believers, they believe the gospel, but they are obligated to do more. He says in verse 15, if a brother or sister be naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you say unto them, depart in peace, be you warmed and filled, good luck. Notwithstanding, you give them not those things that are needful to the body, what does it profit? Even so, faith by itself, if it has not works, is dead. So mercy is still an essential principle. It is a weightier matter of God's law. It's part of the faith of Christ. It's part of the faith that we practice. Now, we are not required to pay what amounts to 3% annually. The government covers a lot of those needs with that 12% that they already take from us. But as we look around, we know the government's funds are not always wisely spent, and there are needs that are simply not covered. There are still needs within the church. We probably look in Scripture for some indication of what amount you should give. Sort of like Peter in Matthew 18, where he says, you know, how often should I forgive my brother if he offends me? Looking for a number. 7 times? No, Jesus answered 70 times 7. In other words, you do it as often as needed. Same principle with mercy. The national third tithe system of Israel was a reasonable starting point, which was about 3%. But the principle is to fill the need whenever you can. And I think at this time of year, I bring it up at this time of year because we start, as I said, bookkeeping anew. We're keeping a new set of second tithe for next year. And we'll probably soon wrap up our contributions of first tithe for this taxable year. So we might also be considering whether we have been blessed and how well we have been blessed to help when there is a need. However you do it, and there are various ways to do it. And you're probably already doing it, following the principle that Jesus said in Matthew 6, verse 3. Just quote you what he said. He said, when you do charitable deeds, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. That's probably what you're doing. You're probably doing much more than I know of, because I don't know what your right hand is or your left hand is doing. You're doing it in secret already. But perhaps this time of the year, you might start making a plan, if you don't already, to set aside a little, personally, for filling those needs when you see them, sort of like a personal third tithe fund. Or perhaps if you prefer, since we don't all know the needs in the church, if you prefer, you you can contribute to the church assistance fund and let the church fill the needs as they discover them, as those needs are reported to the church. Point is, however you do it, we don't keep third tithe, but the principle remains.